Welcome back to NELP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by a Young Professional Network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts today include myself, Brett Lemke, Arm Landscape, Skyler Westergaard with Landcare, and we have a guest, Joe Ketterer. Skyler, we've got a guest. Now it's not just host only anymore. People get to listen to other people talk.
It's great. We've been working on getting Joe on for a few weeks now, and we're glad that he's here. Welcome, Joe.
It's a pleasure and a privilege.
So why don't you give us he's got a bio, so we make sure that we bring legit guests on, right? So he's got some credentials.
Yeah, let's make sure everybody knows that he is a quality guest here. So Joe, let me just introduce you a little bit to our audience and we'll get into a great conversation. So Joe started his landscape career in high school, like maybe some of you. I know I did as well. He was working in the field and received an ornamental horticulture and turf degree from Penn State. Joe then worked his way through the ranks at two top 10 landscape maintenance contractors over four decades. For the past 20 years, he has focused on training, recruiting, teaching, and supporting quality and efficiency in the field. Affectionately known as Coach K, he is passionate about doing things right the first time. Joe also maintains his certified pesticide applicator license in three states where he specializes in weed control strategy. So Coach K, we are glad to have you here, and we definitely want to get into a conversation with you about people, recruiting, teaching. I'd even like to ask some questions about the Coach's Corner newsletter that you do. So hopefully I didn't miss anything, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Skyler and Brett. As I said, it is a privilege. I think it's been a great career. I am currently partially retired now at 64 years of age. But I realized when I got the opportunity to speak last September at Elevate in Dallas that it just kind of like, boy, I love this business. And it really is a labor of love for me now. I am working because I want to, not necessarily because I have to. And I appreciate you not maybe divulging my title, which I was never really fond of. I can explain the Coach K. My title is Director of Quality and Efficiency. And that always bothered me. I didn't ask for that title. I kind of like your title better, Skyler.
Yeah.
And I say that because I spend the better part of my time as a player coach. And I don't ask people to do anything that I couldn't do or wouldn't do myself or haven't done time and time again myself. So I operate a little differently in the sense that I spend most of my time on the road in the field and not in a desk or a classroom. Now, I do like, as you may remember, entertaining. When I do get to present, it's an opportunity to train and entertain, and I have a good time doing it. But on a day-to-day basis, it's boots on the ground in small groups, and sometimes one-on-one. And that's where I spend the bulk of my time these days.
Yeah, I love the analogy of a coach. And as you said, Joe, being willing, not asking other people to do something that you aren't willing to do yourself. I've thought of, and I don't know why I think of myself this way, because I didn't do track or cross country, but you know, a running coach that is running, you know, pushing the runners, but also running alongside them. And you do entertain. If I'm not mistaken, you were up on stage doing some dancing at Elevate as well.
If that's what we want to call it. Yeah, that was completely impromptu, but yeah, you are a very well-educated young man, Skyler, and I regret, I believe you did the artificial intelligence AI thing,
which I didn't
get to attend, but I do have a best friend named, we call him Derek. I'm sorry that I missed that. Brett, I've known, I think, since he was a student at Cobleskill.
Oh, man.
And, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean... through my younger years of learning, I think your engagement within NCLC and just within the industry, very powerful. And then a lot of friends that went to work with you around you at Brickman, and certainly now in Rupert Pieces. And now, I mean, your name comes up in so many of my conversations over the many years in the format of, you know, hey, how do we get a Joe Ketterer in our organization, a person that can help develop and train and focus? Or tell me, you know, and I'll ask some people that have worked with you in the past, what was your role and how did that focus? And just the intensity of attention that you've put to that, that I've heard and other people have seen and just working with you, envious in a lot of ways to the organizations that had your ability. And then, of course, you know, a credit to you and your ability to make that, you know, essential. Mm-hmm. And then storied career with two or large, you know, organizations that saw value in it for many, many years. So, that wasn't, we had you in, okay, move on. You weren't project-based. You really sat with it and stood with an organization for a great deal of time. And so, I think at the end, I mean, it's really a question for both of you is, how does an organization get people that just teach and help educate and not feel and worry about the costs of something like that? Because certainly on the other end is a tremendous value. And so it might come up, but in some part of this conversation, because we all are going to love this, but then it's like, how do you execute it? How do you have a Skyler and a Joe in your organization that can get this thing done?
That's the key word, was execute. You want to go first, Skyler?
I'll just make a comment and a question, and then I really want you to answer this. Sure. So the question is related, but I'm asking this live at risk of embarrassment, but I believe, Joe, when you were with Brickman, involved with Planet or Alka, you were part of the maintenance cost estimating competition at the Student Career Days. And I remember you also, I was a student in a seat participating in that competition. And why I bring that up in relation to Brett's question is because I remember, as I was kind of starting my career early on and thinking of people like you and others that were in that position of training and coaching and stuff, that I wanted to be like that someday. I wanted to be like a Joe someday. So with that being said, I would love to hear you answer the question of, you know, how do companies that you've been involved with, Brickman, Rupert, I'm kind of in a way doing a little bit about what you are doing now with Landcare and with some of the same people. So yeah, I want to put that ball in your court and let you answer Brett's question.
All right. So everyone needs to know that I come from pretty humble background. My father never finished high school. He was a child of the Depression and had to go get a job. I didn't know that I'd ever get to go to college. And my parents were like, do you really need to go to college to cut grass, you know, be a landscaper? Because being from Pittsburgh, we were full of the ex-steelworkers, you know, turned, you know, landscapers. So that hanging over my head, I went and I did it. I had the good fortune to go to Penn State. And this was before there was landscape contracting. And I built my own ornamental horticulture and took all the turf classes that I could get. I technically don't have a degree in turf management, but I aced every turf course they offered. And I'm the only non-turf guy to ever win the Pennsylvania Turf Grass Scholarship. What does that mean? It just means that I was pretty into what I was studying, and it was a privilege to go there. And I graduated with distinction, mostly because I'm as passionate today as I was back then. So I get out of school, I go back to Pittsburgh to work for a small family-owned operation. And Brett, when I did a little research on your company, and I swear to God, it's like I'm playing tapes in my head, you know, that most of the industry is made up of companies like yourselves. Okay, the small family.
For sure.
Craig started that way. Dick Brickman started that way, you know, and it just blossomed. I had the good fortune to be working as a subcontractor for Brickman in Pittsburgh with a small family-owned operation, name of Bob Sarver. And as it turned out, the Brickmans came and I ended up getting a job when they expanded into DC, and I never looked back. I started as a field manager and I worked my way up to production manager and account manager for Susan Brickman when she was in the business. Thought I was going to go the traditional career route. And then we started to really focus as we got bigger in the 90s. And we really saw the need for training. And I was managing a property called Leisure World at the time. It was one of our single largest contracts. And it became almost like a little Brickman University where a lot of new students would come in and work with me, boots on the ground. And a lot of them now are vice presidents, regional vice presidents, and have gone on to do great things. It turned out that my, and Skyler, you can get Mike Bogan to testify to this. I actually reported to Mike as my, he was my branch manager when I was running Leisure World. And Mike helped me with the budget and all the crap that I don't like to do, all that computer stuff. And I took the young people and satisfied the customer. And we had internal customers and external customers. And it was a great ride. And then they just created this position for me, Brett, that you, how did I get to that position? They saw a need, and we were a big company at the time. So you got to have, you know, some overhead. It's an overhead cost. To bottom line, Brett, you asked, like, how do the, when you said, how do we get a joke header in our organization? You do need a certain amount of volume, I guess, to support that overhead position. That's why I ended up staying with the, I was a little fish in a big pond. You know what I mean? You can't be a big fish in a little pond. And that may have answered one of your questions about how this happened. So it was probably in the mid-90s, after my three-year stint at Leisure World, that I got the opportunity to do it full-time. And then Brickman got into the acquisition and the roll-up thing. But I want to be cleared. If I don't remember to say anything, I want to say this. Big does not make you better. If anything, I think it's more of a challenge to get the fundamentals, which is what I, where I spend all my time with boots on the ground, getting the execution. Because I kind of end a lot of my trainings with knowing what to do is one thing, but doing what you know can often be quite another. When you think about that, you know, a lot of us have moved on and you've had a great career and you know what to do, but there were bumps in the road with the execution. And probably the biggest Achilles heel to training and execution is turnover. And one of the things that I am pretty happy with, especially in the Brickman days, we had pretty low turnover. So if you can keep your people and keep your work, you're going to win, you know. And the same when I got, when Brickman sold out into to Brightview, which is, I was on board there for about a year and I didn't really like where it was going. I was riding in the caboose and I saw in my mind, you know, this is not for me. I need to go back to my roots. And essentially, I will be forever grateful to Craig Rupert and Phil Key for creating this position for me. So I essentially got to do the very same job at Rupert that I was doing at Brickman. So that's how I got there. It does require some overhead investment. Safety is the same way. Now, we have a safety division, or a safety department, if you will. But safety is a lot easier to measure, right? You measure your accidents, you know, you can measure your, all those things. How do you measure the effectiveness of your training program? You hopefully it's in your renewal rate, you know, your turnover rate, but it's kind of a subjective number. So I've been rambling a little bit.
Well, I mean, there's the point. Like, you asked the question that I was going to ask, and I'm hoping that both of you said, yeah, this is what they come to me every year with, is this report is, hey, yeah, we have you in this role. And do you find yourself in that conversation? It's not that we're justifying the job, but do they, you know, for both large organizations, have they figured out how to quantify a role in training?
This is such a good question. You saw me on the screen here nodding my head when Joe was talking about, how do you quantify or assess the effectiveness of the training? It's very difficult. It's difficult to do. I agree too with Joe. You know, to going back to what your first question, like, how does a company, you know, get like a full-time Joe or Skyler? And part of it is with the bigger companies. And Joe is will be quick to agree that he said this, bigger isn't necessarily better, but a bigger company, having people that look at training and development is almost becomes a necessity to some point in order to keep all the pistons firing together, because we get more spread out. But the assessment, we actually just had a conversation this week, me and my boss that I report to, which is how do we measure it? How do we assess it? I don't necessarily feel like we have to justify our existence. We have an executive team that supports it, but in a sense you do. I mean, you know, and part of measuring and assessing is so that you have a feedback loop, and that then you can adjust, change, shift, make the training more effective, take stuff out that didn't work that we thought was a great idea. So, I still don't have a great answer to how to best to assess it. Somebody reached out to me this week in the corporate learning and development world to ask for my input on an article about that topic. And I wasn't quite sure how to answer, but they were basically looking for feedback on how do we best assess training in a corporate marketplace. And that's an area where I need to strengthen my skill set.
All right, so it's been an age-old thing, and back in the Brickman days in the 90s, we spent a lot of money on Dr. Edward Deming and Stephen Covey. I talked to you a little bit about this, Skyler.
Yeah.
I've had the good fortune in my life to actually have gotten to listen to Dr. Deming in person before he passed away. Okay, so this... He was 90-some years old.
We're not going to have this in video, but everyone just figured out your age right there. All right, it's Joe. So that was pretty quick tell there. Okay.
Well, the reason I bring it up is that here we are. We might have been 10 of us from a landscape company at Georgetown University in a room full of 1,000 people, nuclear physicists and all kinds of nerds. And we're looking at each other. I'm in my 20s and I'm going, what the heck am I doing here? You know what I'm saying? But the reason I brought it up is it was a wonderful combination of putting, if you know anything about Dr. Deming's, he was all about measurement. He would always say, how do you know? How do you know your training is good? How do you know that it's effective? And it would ask you to measure it. Now, on that subject, I still think it's difficult to measure because it's very subjective. But we had a family of measures that we would look at for renewal rate, you know, turnover rate, and we would try to tie it to those things, employee morale, so on and so forth. But when I got to Rupert, I remember seeing, even before, it might have been at NCLC, because I actually met Craig at an NCLC event. And even though I was somewhat neighbors, I never really met him in person until it was at that time student career days. But they had these cards where it was like a hole punch thing, and it's kind of prehistoric. But if you did training, you would kind of like their own in-house little CLT thing where they were trying to keep track of who was trained on what. So Brett, for the small landscape guys that could be a million-dollar business, and they only have 20 employees or something like that. That you don't need a lot of technology. Now, Skyler, I'm sure you could whip up some cool technology. We are currently using an independent consultant to help us track in what we call our learning management systems, where we are literally tracking each employee on which trainings they have received. So that just trying to answer your question, Brett, with a lot of words.
Well, there's an app for that somewhere out there, I'm sure of it, right? It goes to, I suppose you have to tie everything to the recruiting process, because if you put a person that accepts that training and grows, you know, I mean, I'll phrase the, and we've been using a lot lately, the EOS conversation is the get it, want it, capacity for it. Mm-hmm. If you put one of those people in your organization, then I'm guessing it's a very trackable and a strong growth perspective. It's when you have someone that doesn't have those parts, that goes to the training, that can punch that card, but doesn't go anywhere, right? Is not developing that information. And so I'm certain that both of you have sat in front of or worked with people that just don't get it or don't want it or don't have the capacity for it. And that means it's not going to go anywhere. As much as you teach that person, it's just, that's not what they're willing to listen to or accept. And so I guess it's like, if you could put your organization full of the right people, then this is easy. And so maybe to that point, you've all dealt with those that are missing one of those three. How do you move forward with that? How do you move people beyond that piece? Do you have to find yourself in giving recommendations saying this person isn't getting it? You got to do something else with this person. Or do you just keep doing the job and trying to do it in a different way?
You keep doing the job. You got to keep your nose to the grindstone. That's what coaches do. They repeat and repeat, repeat. But for those individuals that you mentioned that might be stuck, they're just here for a job. You have to weigh whether or not how long can you tolerate them being, you know, we're still a very labor intensive industry. So some people are there just for a job, but I will tell you, and I've been very impressed at Rupert in particular with the number of individuals that we've been able to take from pretty humble backgrounds, and in some cases, some pretty troubled backgrounds, if you will, and turn them into something that, you know, I am so proud of one of my training reps who's now an assistant branch manager that really had some very, very difficult personal issues. And he's found his way, and we've provided the path for him to be successful. And he's going to do it. He's doing it. He started the same time I did as a field person, a crewman. And now he's an assistant branch manager in probably a $5, $6 million branch.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing. So you got to kind of do both. It's not one or the other. It's kind of like whack-a-mole, and you got to just keep plugging away. And I am so convinced that I work every day to try to add value. And I have to get my managers to support me in their regional budgets, you know. But I said, the greatest thing that happened to me at our Christmas party this past December was, we need more Joe time. Then there are some people that are just, they're not thrilled that I'm retiring, you know, and that I can't be all things to all people. They just say, we would like more Joe time. And I have that letter. I'm going to save it in where I keep all my good stuff.
Well, I was thinking the same lines, you know, it's not always easy to decide, you know, when you got to draw the line where somebody just doesn't have drive or work ethic. But there's the other side of it. And Joe, you were talking about this is, and I'm thinking about this a lot. I just finished reading, this is going to sound really boring, but a textbook on adult learning theory and methodology, not something that many people probably have on their reading list, but, adult learners are different than, teenage learners or child learners. And I won't go into a ton of detail here, but it's interesting to consider that people learn in different ways and different things resonate with them. So that's one thing I was referring to in the assessment is it may not be just the person's ability to learn to get it, want it, but the way we are providing that training to them. And so sometimes it needs to be provided in a different way that resonates with that person or that connects with that person. And so there's actually like generations of research out there for different models and different ways and even tests that people can take on figuring out what their learning style is and all that stuff. But all that being said, it's still essential to get the right person on the bus. If you take a very creative artist that thinks like an artist and put them in front of a spreadsheet, you can only do so much, right? So getting the right person at the right seat on the bus and then finding ways that you can train that resonate and connect with them is part of the challenge and work that Joe and I do also.
Well, no surprise, it's on your mind. You're constantly thinking about it. It goes back to those owner operators or just organizations that have to provide, the job and responsibility of training goes to the operations folks. And so they have to both run jobs or manage jobs and also train the people. And so certainly everybody will probably say it got to be easier when you can split those roles and functions. But then the expectation is that it gets more intense, right? So when you all became and probably your roles were created before you or with you, the expectation gets much, much higher that, the training is going to be much more focused and attentions to it, and it's going to be more consistent. And if there is a challenge, you will flip that quickly, right? And so, envious, and then probably sometimes a little like, wow, that probably is really tough because what you're doing is a job that requires constant repetition in training. Mm-hmm. So you're trained, but then on to the next person, on the next person. So not easy by any stretch of the imagination, right? Mowers and sell a job, retain a job, has its own challenges, but train somebody and help grow, like probably some of the most difficult parts of our organization and especially around the people parts. So no one's envious of what you've all gone through, I imagine. I mean, but to be able to have somebody that could think the way you all think and hang on to that, right? So tomorrow, this is a wonderful conversation. And this afternoon, I'm going to have to figure out how to, retain or sell a new business, right? We got to constantly flip our brains.
Yeah. Well, Joe,
yeah, you can't do it all.
On that topic, I want to ask a question of Joe, because this is a challenge, is you're one person, right? In the organization, I'm one person, but we have a few thousand employees. So how do you, Joe, take that training, that coaching and make it scalable, scale it up to more people and get the water to the end of the row effectively, if that makes sense. I grew up around corn country. So
that is the analogy. That is the challenge. I think we're up to 30 some maintenance branches now. Okay. So, and they go from Philadelphia to Florida, essentially go right down 95, throw in Nashville and Texas. So what we do, there's a safety committee, there's a training committee. There are safety reps in each branch. So each branch, one of the mid-level managers, they're called area managers in our system. They have all the responsibilities of an area manager, plus the added hat of being the safety rep. Okay. Then there's a training rep, another area manager. There's very few times can you have the same guy to the two hats and still take care of the customers and all that and make money, because we still got to make money. Right. And then we have a biweekly call now she's my replacement. Her name is Kate Dean. I think you may have met her at Elevate, but she works out of the corporate office and she is our director of training. She administers that call every other Monday. And it's probably a half hour, 45 minute call. And we talk about what we talked about last call. And it's always a current topic, like this time around, it's about winter cutbacks and having the jobs clean and ready to to start prepping for the mulching or pine strawing, depending on where you are. And we try to keep the operational training very current with the calendar of landscape operations on the maintenance side. Construction has their own training. This is specifically for the maintenance operations because it's such a repetitive thing that we do. But it's then up to that training rep who was in that half hour meeting to go to his or her staff meeting the following day. Every branch is expected to have a staff meeting, and that training rep shares that information with their colleagues. And then the next day there's a field manager meeting. So that's the lower level. These are the guys that drive the trucks, the guys and girls that drive the trucks. And they try to take the bullets of that training and disseminate it amongst the field managers. And then it's the field manager's responsibility as if, and Craig set them up as if they were their own business. They get a truck and a trailer and a book of work, and they got to pretty much do everything. And there are assistant field managers, and there are some crew members that probably are better operators than they are. And that's key to recognizing. You don't have to be, I will never be the walk behind operator that some of my guys are, but I need to know how to teach the next guy, because you don't ever want to fall into the habits. And I made a freaking career out of teaching the three universal principles of mowing. And I credit that to a guy named Don Sinisvet, who was credited with getting and helping Brickman get into the maintenance business way back when, you know, in the 70s. I know Brett knows that name. Skyler, I'm not sure of. You might be too young. But we were big on the schools and taking the guys out of school, whether it's Cobleskill, you know, and Mississippi State and all those dudes. And I remember some of them saying, as I recruited, I didn't go to school for 4 years to cut grass. And I'm like, any monkey can cut grass. And I'm like, well, you're going to be the best damn monkey out there cutting grass, because it's the basis of what we do in landscape maintenance. So you got to get that part right. And that's where I spent most of my career. And while they're out there making rocket science out of mowing, I'm looking at all the horticultural details, whether it be weeds or pruning, and trying to find the latest in equipment or innovation, you know, plant growth regulators, all those things, so that we can do things better, faster, cheaper, and just grow.
So that's for the audience. What are the fundamentals of mowing? Like, 'cause I think this is, if it's the age, for your career, what are they?
Big machine first, or the corollary is right machine for the right area. 'Cause I'm not talking about taking a 60 inch laser where a walk behind should mow. And I'm not talking about, you know, that things, but you, there's a sequence to mowing. We call it scripting. That's a whole other thing that we, you know, you're nodding your head, Skyler, because I know a lot of the people at Landcare know what I'm talking about because I taught them these things. But it's big machine first. The second one is avoid excessive line trimming. And the third one is keep the grass in the grass, because blowing sucks. Okay, I had to get one in there. But that actually became pretty easy when we, with the advent of mulching mowers. Almost every mower we purchase now is a mulching mower for safety reasons. So we had to learn how to not be blowing grass with those open chutes into the streets, onto windows, cars, mulch beds. You know, it was all about keeping the grass in the grass. But if within those three principles, Don Sinisvet gave me, like, I think there were 14 deadly time wasters. And for instance, if your crew leader is operating the primary mower, he's setting himself up for failure, because you cannot be on the primary mower out in front of the crew and not know what's going on behind you. And I, when I'm in the field and I see the crew field manager, and our language is field manager, if that individual is running the large machine, I pull them off it almost every time. And then he'll say, or shit, usually it's a he, because it's a male guy thing, that if I don't do it, it don't get done. And I said, well, if you got that attitude, well, there's where we got to start. Because when I ran mowing crews, I ran the line trimmer. I was the last one through, or a blower. Mm-hmm. Or I was carrying a backpack sprayer after that was all done, and I'm bringing up the rear after everything is clean, and I'm spraying, spot spraying for weeds. So it's a system that I was shown in the, let's see, 80s. I think I started in 83. And I have made a career out of it, to be honest with you.
You'll be glad to know, Joe, that we are still teaching at Landcare those principles and how to site script and all that stuff. I've actually developed some training on those three very things this past year.
And grass in the grass is just, you know, one of those things I love sharing. I don't think it's gone as low as deep as I want it to sometimes, but it is. And it's just the Brickman, right? I've heard it through Phil Sexton, was a big teacher of mine into mm-hmm. that piece. And it just translates through and it's approachable. Grama and la grama. I heard that's the translation from Spanish. I had to learn that one. Yeah. And so it's taken on so many iterations. And I asked you to share that because it's the simple parts that will have really effective movements. And obviously your roles have evolved that, yeah, you teach that, but you're teaching more advanced techniques or furthering yeah. into better field management or better leadership styles and so on. But it is it starts there. And I think for our listeners that say, well, where does it start? What book should they read? What you know, conference? No, it just starts with keep the grass in the grass. Understand that script.
These are really fundamentals. I spend my entire life, you know, so many of my students, Phil Sexton, a lot of them, they've gone on to do great things, and I'm still coaching boot that, you know, Rupert, they like to say 30,000 feet, give me the 30,000 foot version of it. Cause it's so detail oriented. It drives a lot of my leaders nuts. You know, if I get off on it like this, but when you come out into the field and you see it, it doesn't take you long to like, yeah, that makes sense. Well, that makes sense. A line trimmer is a weapon of mass destruction. We typically put the new guy on the line trimmer and he's slinging rocks and grass and doing bad things with it, you know, but we feel like that's where the new guy should go. But how about we have that proper training, take the time to train and have the mower rodeos, we like to call them. Yeah. And you got to teach the people, you got to coach, but that crew leader has to get it out of his head that it's a pecking order and that I'm the boss, so I get to ride the machine. It is sometimes very difficult to untrain that habit. And, you know,
this is going to sound like I know a lot about sports history, which I don't, but the idea of fundamentals and teaching the fundamentals. And I think it was, often quoted Vince Lombardi in 1961 Green Bay Packers season. You know, can you imagine what he did is took this group of professional football players on the first day of training camp and said, gentlemen, this is a football. This is what a football does. This is the rules to the game. These are professionals. These guys have been playing since they were kids. You know, it shows the importance of just hitting those fundamentals, building that foundation. Those three universal principles of mowing are the fundamentals. That's this is a football, you know, in Vince Lombardi's terms, this is how a football works.
Yeah. I hope for our listeners that, you know, that just can resonate for a little bit, that anything you need to train, it just find that fundamental point there. And it will generate the next conversation. You'll identify and learn where the gaps are. You know, that's what the story is, you know, this conversation is showing, is that, you know, early on in both your careers, you know, in the roles, you were asked to find the problem, you found the problem, it exposed another problem, you fix that problem, you keep going, and those things are getting trained out. And so Nonetheless, you probably have to keep the grass in the grass every single year to many, many people because of turnover or reminders and things like that. So it just, there is no 100%. Check the box and move on, right? None of this stuff ever stops existing.
You have to keep watering the plants every week.
One of the challenges, Brett, and you correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm pretty sure I've been to the bowling alley up in Cobleskill and things. And I
just one bowling alley, not many, right? Just we got at least a bowling alley.
We used to do some recruiting there, most of this, I went when I decided on ornamental horticulture, I thought I was going to go work for the Brickman Group, the number one design build company. And when you talk about like design build, there's like a lot of hoorah around it, right? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're going to do maintenance. No, I'm not. No, I'm not. I'm not going to cut grass. You know what I mean? And think you know where I'm going with this, Brett. Oh, yeah. You know, and it's kind of hard when maintenance is the way Dick Brickman said it is kind of, he had to be really talked into the whole maintenance thing. That they were all about design build, mm-hmm. but maintenance is the recurring revenue. Okay. That if you sell $1 million worth of maintenance, he used to say, you want to grow by 20%, you only got to sell 200,000. If you sell $1 million worth of design build and you perform it and you want to grow by 20%, you got to sell 1,200,000 because you already did that. That's done and over with, So Dick used to always say the light bulb went off, and Craig experienced the same thing. In your organization, you guys have been in business for 50 years, I think. Your father started the business in the 70s.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure you were one of the guys with Ed Ferner that you were the design build guys.
It's the cool, sexy stuff that Skylar got to do all the time, drawing the really cool landscape. I wanted to be one of those guys. Yeah. It's there. And then you learn the story about what this industry, all the different opportunities and what can you explore. And what maintenance and snow in our market and just the new passions came from it. And so, where we started and what we had as an idea to where it became, it's just plenty of opportunity within this industry to really just grow. And I would think some of the best project managers out there could be really great operations managers because it's processes. We've spoken to, I think, enough people in the design build world that truly are passionate and enough people in maintenance that will be the battle of the ages to say, prove which industry is cooler, right? Maintenance is cooler. So
we're brothers. I think we're brothers.
We share a common piece to all that.
I think what's important for the listeners and these young professionals is to find your lane. I really did expect to go work in design build, like in construction, because that's where the cool stuff was. We're moving trees with cranes and I don't know squat about hardscape. I know even less about irritation. I call it irrigation irritation because I got all up involved in the maintenance and I don't regret it. I literally have made a career of making mowing rocket science. That's when people ask me what I do. I said I made mowing rocket science. I just think what's really important is to I've had so much great leadership in my career that recognized my strengths and my weaknesses. And we've had the performance review processes. Earlier on, you talked about how to measure, Brett, your training. There's regular evaluations that we hold with our crew members, to let them know what they're good at and where they need to improve. And I have had some stellar leadership over the course of my career to help me realize that I am working in my lane. I'm doing what I was meant to do. And that's why at 64, I can do the silly things that I did You know, I love to present. I love to teach, and part of the training is entertaining, and the people got to be into it. And nobody sleeps in my class. I won't let them.
Not a chance. And I think a testament to your career is, you know, even the stories that both Skylar and I shared is that what you've taught is part of us and is part of many people. And so I think I think for both of us, we hope that we can leave a footprint in this industry like you did, Joe, or have, and still are, and that effectiveness. So you found a way to have something that they didn't know they wanted to know become something they love and are passionate for, and then they've taught somebody else, right? And so it's one testament to say, all right, you know how to do it, go do it. Yep, I do it. But they're now teaching others. And so I think, Joe, you've shown how that can be done and done for a really long time. So I'm just always impressed and enjoy the when I get to hear you speak. You know, always wish to be able to learn more under what you have, but you said there's a lot of other disciples out there now teaching and learning this thing. So I'm hoping that but grass in the grass, that will stay with me. I'm in deep on that one. Well, we've hit that time, and I think it's just it's a rose and thorn segment. And so we would say, what's been going well? What's been a thorn or a pain? You know, that could be personal, professional, all things there. Skylar, why don't you kick it off?
Sure. It's been nice having this conversation with you, Joe. And I love how you kind of wrapped it up and talked about, you know, finding where your passion is, you know, for those listening in on the podcast, you know, find what is it that, you know, gets you up in the morning and be really good at that, independent of what other people think you should be doing or what you perceive other people think you should be doing, you know, in your career. So yeah, it's always fun at the end of the podcast to just share a rose and thorn from the past week, or it's been a couple weeks that since we've been together. A few weeks ago, I shared my thorn was that I've started to run a lot this past year in 2023, and I had a strained muscle in my left leg, which was causing me physical and mental anguish. But I can report my rose this past week is that I've got up to a 10K in my running distance. And so I'm actually planning setting a goal this spring to run an official 10K, which I know for the runners out there is like small potatoes, but for me, it's a huge accomplishment. So I'm excited about running a 10K. It won't be fast. I'm sure I'm not going to get any medals, but I'll finish it. The thorn, you know, we were going to go visit family over the Christmas break. I'm down in Alabama. My in-laws just moved down there, and it was going to be a big get together with my brother-in-law and his family and us and everything. And both my in-laws came down and got really, really sick and were kind of miserable. And so we didn't end up going. So it was a little bit of a thorn that we couldn't get together with the family and the cousins and all that stuff. But we hope to be able to get together with them soon. So that's my rose and thorn from this past week.
NK is a damn good goal, buddy. That'll make you work. How about you, Joe?
Well, I'd like to say I can run a 10K, but I'm happy right now to do my 15 minutes on a treadmill. My rose is that I was going to do a snow removal thing, but now you got me thinking about the health thing, Skylar, and I'm only as good as I'm able to get up and get around, right? And 2 years ago, I was diagnosed with a cancer, mild form of bladder cancer, and I'm cancer-free at the moment. Last year, I had chest pain that I thought was, acid reflux. Mm-hmm. Damn near died in a hotel in King of Prussia. And went and got some tests done, found out that I have severe clogs going on, and I'm the proud owner of 4 stents. And currently, you know, I'm just happy to be above ground. And that was candidly part of my reason for going into partial retirement for health reasons. But I feel great right now. And I guess everything is going very well. And my thorn is that all this damn snow that we're getting is keeping me grounded because I am blessed that I don't have to do snow removal anymore. But it's keeping us from getting the training up and going because snow trumps everything. You may not feel that. You're from Idaho. So Skylar, I know you, I think you went to BYU Idaho. So you know what snow is.
Yeah, I don't.
Brett, you look remarkably calm and collected. You know,
I'm in Texas now, so we do have teams on the East Coast where you are that are dealing with it. But I'm in Texas, so it's
snow is good, but the thorn of it for a trainer is it's keeping us from getting on with our regular work. But we have not had snow, and snow is good. We love snow.
That's a good point. We've now finally starting to see snow, which I guess we'll call a bit of a rose too, right? But winter's here and it's starting to feel like it. I'll share that, you know, I just had a little bit of time with some industry friends this past weekend, going to Leaders Forum on this coming week, looking forward to that networking. So this is always a good time to sort of dig into refreshing the brain in these new years. And so I think Leaders Forum is going to be well-timed. Mexico is going to be nice, right? It's not going to be snowing down there, I think, I'm pretty sure. So really excited about that. And the thorn is just sometimes just not enough time. So to do this travel, you have to sacrifice something, time in office, time with families. These are the things. So for every good opportunity, you know, something else could be most. So it's like that little bit of that FOMO, you fear of missing out somewhere else in the part. So miss the kids, miss time at work, but just going to truly embrace the time with network friends and my wife joining me. And so this is going to be a lot of fun. So, I've learned there's no such thing as a quiet time of the year. I used to think like, oh, the winter's that's the chill time. We could all really regain our stride. And no, it's all busy. Just got to go like heck all the time. So hopefully everybody finds a chance to have some peace and quiet, semi-retirement, running and running the 10K. Those all get some moments of mind where you could just sort of reflect and relax a little bit. And so hopefully everybody will hear that you're going semi-retirement, or they're going to try to keep you busy, Joe. I mean, but now you get to choose, right? So if somebody could use your help, I know you always would be there, but now you get to say when and how and what. So, or just put this podcast on repeat and you'll get the wisdoms from these two every single day. So, thank you, Joe. We appreciate it. We appreciate your contribution to the industry and your time with us today.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. Thank you.
I thank you all. I look forward to being of service. I'm not dead. I'm still alive. I'm just retired in the hills of central Pennsylvania, but I love what I do, and I wish you all the best of luck in your future endeavors. You guys are already decorated veterans and the future of NALP.
He's just saying that because he sees all this gray in our beards, Skylar. So don't even. We're veterans for sure. Yeah. Well, to our listeners,
I'm just happy they're here.
Right. Yeah. Ours is starting at top. We'll get there with you. And we hope all to our young professional network that everyone else gets to grow old in this industry, loving what they do every single day. And maybe that'll cause a little gray hair. It's just part of life. Thank you all for listening. Subscribe. Join us for our next conversation. And to Joe and Scott, have a great day.
Thank you. See you.